Interception! Matt Ryan!
Hey y'all, big day here. It is officially the first episode, the inaugural episode of the Saints Chat 504 podcast, powered by NOAA.com, the Times-Picayune, and New Orleans Advocate. My name is Jeff Nowak, NOAA.com's digital sports producer. You can find me on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. And I decided to bring this podcast along because I wanted to give our coverage just an extra angle for all of you audiophiles out there who just can't get enough of that great NOAA.com Saints coverage in this bizarre, weird, just completely upside down 2020 NFL season and 2020 year. For that matter, there's not that much time left in it, but you know, we're going to get through it together. If you're listening on whatever podcast listening service you frequent, make sure to hit that subscribe button. If that service allows you to rate and review, hit that rate and review, give us a 5-star rating, let us know you're listening, hit us with any feedback, reviews, whatever you can think of. We'd love to hear from y'all. Hit me up on Twitter. DMs are always open. Again, that's Jeff_Nowak on Twitter. And otherwise, we're going to get right into it. And we've got a really great episode today, in my opinion, considering it's our first ever episode, because we'll have Deuce McAllister joining us. I spoke with him earlier today, and we hit on a bunch of topics that obviously is of heavy interest heading into week 11 after a week 10 victory, the sixth straight victory for the Saints that came at quite a cost. You know, I would wonder to hear the feedback on, you know, would Saints fans have been okay losing that game if it meant not, meaning 5 broken ribs and a collapsed lung for Drew Brees? You know, it's probably a decision. but, you know, that's not a decision we get to make. So we do have to live in the reality where Drew Brees is likely out for a significant period of time. It's tough to know how long that's going to be. Again, he had 5 cracked ribs. I might have said broken earlier. They're cracked ribs, which is a difference. I'm not a doctor, so I couldn't tell you exactly how much more significant broken versus cracked would be. But either way, you can imagine that's a tough thing to play through. He suffered a couple of those cracked ribs against the Bucs a week earlier. I looked through the tape, and there were 2 big hits that he suffered that I imagine were when that did happen. One came in the first half, late in the first half, where he took a hit on a blitz, and then the second hit came on that fumble where Jared Cook or Shaq Barrett beat Jared Cook around the outside, and he kind of got blindsided. And I have to imagine one of those or both of those hits is where that initial injury occurred. He said after the 49ers game that it was cumulative, and that would explain that. The obvious hit that caused the injury against the 49ers came late in the first half on a scoring drive. Kentavious Street beat Cesar Ruiz and just blew him up. Got flagged for unnecessary roughness for driving his body weight into the ground. I saw a few people saying it was a dirty hit. I don't think it was a dirty hit. If you watch the replay, you saw Andrews Pete get blocked back into him, and his back kind of collided with Breeze and Street as Street got there, and that's what kind of led into the body weight tackle. But the other thing I will say is it was the correct call by the rule. If you disagree with the rule, that's one thing, but you know, by the rules, that is what should be called. For that not to be called a penalty, Street would have had to kind of pull away, or at least make an effort to pull away. There's only so much you can expect a defensive lineman to do, but he has to at least make an attempt, and the ref needs to see him make that attempt. It might have still had the same effect, but if he kind of releases that right arm and like pulls his right shoulder out of the equation, even if he does still kind of impact Breeze enough to crack his ribs, which, you know, he probably still would have, they probably would have got away with that hit. But as it happened, as you watch that replay, it was a penalty. And there's a reason that rule that exists, that's existed for a few seasons now and gets complained about every time it's called, there's a reason that team personnel and team officials don't go in and ask to change that. And it's because they don't want their quarterback taking that hit. No team wants their quarterback hurt. And that's the type of hit that hurts quarterbacks. It's the same reason they outlawed hitting the quarterbacks low after Tom Brady got his knee taken out and missed an entire season. You know, the NFL knows what happens when their quarterbacks go out, and they're going to do everything they can to protect them. And as an NFL fan, as much as annoying as it is to see those penalties called, you want the quarterbacks in the game. The NFL is really kind of boring when the quarterbacks aren't there. You know, as good as all the players in the NFL team are, that's the most important position in sports for a reason. You know, the 49ers went to that game with Nick Mullins as their quarterback. Their margin for victory is so, so narrow as long as Nick Mullins is their quarterback. And this isn't a slight to Nick Mullins. Nick Mullins is fine. Nick Mullins is a fine backup, but he's not a starting quarterback in the NFL. And when you lose your starting quarterback in the NFL, unless you're the Saints and have very conveniently had really, really high caliber quarterbacks each of the past two seasons when they lost Breeze for a significant period of time, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. And that's just the fact of the NFL. And that's why rules exist to protect quarterbacks in the NFL. And that will not be going anywhere. But, you know, I'm rambling now because this is something that's been annoying me all week and I'm going back and forth with people on Twitter all week. But that's going to be the topic of conversation for now. It's going to be the topic of conversation going forward. And I'm sure, you know, as we go on in this podcast, I'm hoping to bring you a new episode at least once a week. You know, maybe some quick episodes off of breaking news, maybe some post-game episodes. We'll have to see how it goes. I don't know how much time I'll have to throw these out there for you, but I'll do my best. And I'd love to hear from y'all if there's anything, any type of episode you're looking for, any certain interviews, anything like that. And I'll see if I can work them in here. This is really kind of building the plane as we're already in the air. And so I hope y'all get something valuable out of this. I hope y'all enjoy it. And for now, I will cut into the recorded interview with Deuce McAllister. We talked about the Drew Brees injury, you know, as a former teammate of his being the exact same age. We talked about the Saints playing without fans. We talked about calling the game without fans, which is as weird for the broadcasters as it is for the players, I imagine. We talked about Alvin Kamara, considering he's on pace to break Deuce McAllister's franchise record for yards from scrimmage. And we talked a little bit about Jameis Winston. Bear in mind that the recording of the interview is over Zoom, so the quality is going to be a little different, and it might be a little jarring at first, but bear with me. I think there's a lot of good stuff in there. I want to thank Crown Royal for helping us get that interview set up today. And I'm, without further ado, let's bring in Deuce. Well, Deuce, I appreciate you taking the time. Sorry, I missed. I messed up the time zone earlier.
Not a problem at all.
Yeah, it didn't even enter my mind that we could be in Central and
or Eastern. So not a problem at all.
Well, first, I just want to say I've been whenever I haven't been able to cover the games at the Dome this season for obvious reasons. But every time I do, I always throw you guys on the on my headphones so I can have some idea what's going on. You guys are great. The last few seasons. So
I appreciate it.
So, I mean, first, you know, this has been such a weird season just for everybody. And, you know, from your perspective, calling the games, you know, especially with no fans there, I feel like that energy's got to be weird. How has that been for y'all?
Really weird, particularly when we only had the first couple of home games. You didn't have any fans. And then I think it went from 750 up to 3,000. And the last home game, it was 6,000. So I'm just happy to have some friends back. I mean, because you talk about having to find the energy, not only from a broadcast standpoint, but from a player standpoint, you could literally hear some of the plays and hear everything down on the field. And, you know, it was interesting to say the least, particularly when you're at home or even on the road and you're in some of those dome stadiums, the sound just travels. And so it was weird, but we got through it, and hopefully we can continue to have some fans. You know, that's really out of our control. Only thing we can kind of do is, hey, look, when the game is being played, go out there and call it as best possible.
In your playing days, did you ever encounter anything like even remotely like playing in a stadium with nobody in it?
I played in some stadiums where there were very few people in it because we were so bad. It wasn't because there was a limit on how many people could attend. It was because we were so bad. So in a similar situation, but not, you know, quite as unique as this one.
Right. You had to bring your own energy, but it wasn't because it was echoing.
That's exactly right.
So kind of switching course here, I think your perspective is going to be really interesting on this because, you know, you and Drew are, you know, essentially the same age. You're both 41. I think you're only born a couple of weeks apart. So seeing what he's going through now with those injuries, from your perspective, obviously, knowing what it's like to take hits in an NFL game and the type of impact that is in your body, and also knowing what it feels like to currently be 41, you know, what goes through your mind when you see a guy, you know, that you played with kind of going through that type of, you know, the ribs and the lung and all that and trying to get back?
Well, it doesn't necessarily start here this year. It's really the last 3 or 4 years. It's like, man, Drew, you're still out there playing and dominating at a high level. And so, you know, one of the things that he does so great is to be a creature of habit and a creature of nature, how he takes care of his body. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing, really, when you talk about, well, he's 41, he's not going to recover quick or soon enough. You know, it's going to take some time. He should go ahead and retire. You don't prepare all offseason just to be able to walk away like that. And so he is going to do everything in his power. You know, you can talk about getting in the cryo chamber. You can talk about some of the new techniques they have out there with some of the infrared treatment, whether you're talking about getting in the oxygen tank to be able to any and everything that he feels that can help him be able to get his body back healthy. He's going to do. And so he's going to have more time just because he's not in the meetings. So he's going to do all of those things to see if it helps to speed up that process. So he feels that he's healthy, that he can go out there and help his team. So I know how I feel at 41 getting hits. So I couldn't imagine how he feels at 41 still getting hits, you know, and I've been retired for almost 11 years. And so to think that he's still going out there and doing it at a high level, it's amazing.
Yeah, and one of the things, so I've had a few people come and ask me, it's like, oh, do you think this is going to be, you know, the end of Drew's career in the same way that Romo kind of had to, his career ended in similar fashion in the sense that he's had injuries pile up and then Dak showed up and he just, you know, he hung it up and he went to the broadcast booth. To me, you know, from the stories I hear about Drew from, you know, teammates and from like all of everything that I've seen, he just doesn't seem like the type of guy that would allow it to end that way. It wouldn't feel like it computes. I'm curious if you have any insight, if you have any, you know, from being his teammate, if you kind of have any input on that kind of topic.
Never want an injury to take you away from the game. And so that's whether you're Deuce McAllister or Drew Brees, you don't want that to be the lasting image. But sometimes, you know, you can't control it. You can't control it. And sometimes you have to keep the player away from himself when it's a situation where he can't protect himself. And so I don't think that's going to be the case, this situation. You know, when you talk about Drew hanging him up, I always think it'll be his ultimate decision, whether that's this year or next year. We don't really know. We know he has some things set up post NFL already. So, you know, if he feels like, hey, look, you know, he talks to his family, feel like that's the best direction for he and his family to go in, then, you know, you can't be upset. You know, he's done so much for the NFL. He's done so much for New Orleans, this team. Whatever he does decide to walk away, that's his choice. I mean, but it's right now for us. Let's see if he can get healthy and then just enjoy him while he's here.
For sure, for sure. You know, kind of changing course a little bit. I'm curious from the perspective of being a running back who, you know, still holds the franchise record for yards from scrimmage and watching what Alvin Kamara has done so far this season, you know, what are your kind of takeaways from just how good has he been even compared to last year and the year before that? Because it just seems like he's reached another level this year when they've needed him most.
I don't know if you find the right adjectives to be able to describe some of the things that he does. You know, amazing isn't good enough. You know, phenomenal probably isn't good enough. You know, it's unique, you know, and that's probably just who he is as far as not only a player, but a runner as well. He is a unique player on the football field because he does a really nice job of running the football, but also how he is able to catch the football down the field, whether it's in the flat, whether it's, you know, on an option route, an angle route, whatever it may be. And so, you know, for him, I say, hey, look, Alvin, go get him. You know, go get all those records. And, you know, he deserves them. The work that he puts in the offseason, his teammates being able to help him accomplish some of those things. So records were made to be broken anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, from the perspective of a traditional running back in the NFL, it almost feels like, you know, the way Taysom Hill is a quarterback, but he's not really a quarterback. It almost feels like Alvin Kamara is a running back. But calling him a running back almost seems reductive at this point, considering he's, you know, he's up in the top 15 in receiving yards among all players. And like when you put up your record season, I want to say it was 1,600 rushing yards and something like 500 receiving yards. That's a big number for a running back. He's on pace to put up, you know, 1,200 receiving yards, set an NFL record. Is that something you see kind of like as the NFL continues to evolve, that his kind of vision at that position is something you expect to see more of, you know, similar to Christian McCaffrey over in Carolina now?
Yeah, well, the NFL is changing on how they use the quarterback and obviously how they use the running backs. You know, it's more of a passing league now than it was 15 to 20 years ago. And so it's just different, you know. And so for him to have the skill set as a traditional running back to be able to catch the football, you know, it's almost in a sense of like a guy like Larry Sinners or even Marshall Faulk, their ability to be able to catch the football back when I was playing in LaDainian Tomlinson as well. And so, you know, he is a traditional running back. He can run the football, but you know, just to be able to catch it and have those yak yardage and some of the success that he has down the field catching the football, I think it's special. And, you know, you look at how the NFL has evolved as far as throwing the football, that speaks to that as well.
Yeah, and I think this season, more than any other, you've seen him really understand how to throttle. I've seen so many plays this year where he had the ability to get hit and he didn't, you know, especially after last season where he had that injury. I'm curious, is that something you've noticed? I want to say that run against the Packers is the one that really stands out, where he didn't even run any faster than Eric McCoy, and he didn't get touched going into the end zone at all. It just seems like he's really kind of reached that point where he understands exactly how to use his speed at every point.
Well, not only using his speed, but to be able to set up blocks. I think that's the most important deal of it. And then, you know, guys don't get a square hit on him. Very rarely do you see him get caught and get hit square. So I think that's the special part about it. I think he had a run last week where it was only maybe a 2-yard run or even maybe a 4 or 5-yard loss. These 6 or 7 guys hit him, and none of them tackled him. And so it was literally a team or the cavalry had to come to bring him down. But, I mean, he just makes simple plays look spectacular. And then, you know, his ability to be able to catch it out of the backfield or catch it as a receiver, you know, what separates him from so many other backs in the NFL.
For sure. And kind of bridging off that, you know, obviously we're going to see Jameis Winston. Well, we're going to see some combination of Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill. You know, what did you see from Jameis against the 49ers, and what do you kind of expect for him heading into a game against a team he knows pretty well in the Falcons?
Yeah, I think when you look at it, you know, it's probably an okay performance. Could have been better from Jameis's standpoint, just because he really didn't know he was going to get thrown in when he did. You know, even at halftime, it wasn't like the adjustment was made for Jameis to take over. It's really literally Sean and Drew talking on the sideline and telling Jameson, hey, look, you're up, you're going in. And so, you know, he's probably had some nerves. And this week, kind of wait and see how much they use Taysom, how much they use Jameis. But at the end of the day, I think both of those guys know they have to be able to lead that offense, take care of the football. It starts in that standpoint, and then being able to really get them comfortable with what they're doing. And so game plan wise, it will be something that fits both of them as far as their skill set is concerned. You know, and that's a little bit more work on Sean and those guys, but I think they're going to be up to the challenge.
And just from a larger perspective, you know, obviously the interesting thing about the Saints this year is, you know, normally you'd say, oh, what can we expect without Drew Brees? You know, you actually have a really good frame of reference from last year with Teddy Bridgewater, and he had a similar situation where he got thrown into the game against the Rams and kind of struggled, but then he came back the next week and really played. He played consistently better week after week going from there. Is that kind of what you expect to see from Jameis?
Well, I think one thing that you have to remember, Teddy had been with you for a year as well. And then Teddy had gotten to go through a whole offseason as well. So from a comfortable situation, Teddy was probably a little bit more comfortable in that offense. And so, you know, it would be pressing the issue a lot quicker if that's what you're expecting from Jameis to be able to take over from Drew, you know, and have that type of success. You know, I'm hoping so, but you have to remember some of those things as well. You know, Jameis had been in the – I mean, Teddy Bridgewater had been in the offense almost a year and a half when he finally had to take over from Drew Brees.
It's a really good point. I think there's also some style differences there where Jameis has always been kind of a gunslinger and Teddy has always been more of a conservative quarterback in that sense. So it'll be interesting to see how those two guys how that differs as Sean kind of designs this offense around two very different guys.
No, I definitely agree with you. I think, you know, Jameis is a guy that's going to push the football down the field a little bit more. Teddy Bridgewater has that ability, but he's probably more of a little more accurate as far as passer. So he's probably a lot more similar to Drew in that respect.
All right, there it is. You heard from Deuce McAllister. I want to thank him again for taking the time to talk to me today. I thought he had a lot of really good points and some insight that you can't find in a lot of places, because the fact that he is a former teammate of a guy who's the same age as him and he's been retired for 11 years, it's just, you got to imagine like what it's like to watch a guy you used to play with still out there. It's got to be bizarre. That's when I set that interview up, that was like the first question that popped into my head, because I've known for a while that they're both 41, and it's the craziest thing. That Brees, you know, you look at Brees and it's easy to take for granted how insane it is that he is still playing football at the age he is and still doing it at such a high level. And like Deuce said, he's been retired for 11 years. You know, it's hard to even remember Drew Brees at that point because he's been, you know, he's done so many incredible things since then. So, you know, watching this recovery is going to be one of the more interesting things Saints fans have had to do in a while. It's a lot different from last year. It's a lot different from that thumb injury. There was no question whether he was going to get back quickly enough to have an impact at the end of the season. You know, it was a significant injury. He needed surgery, and it was on his throwing hand. So you had some serious questions about whether that would impact him. How would he come back? He came back with a brace. Would the brace be an impact? But it happened so early in the season that you knew that he was going to be able to get back early enough to have to get enough games under his belt that when he got to the playoffs, you were pretty confident that he was up to snuff on that front. This year, it's different because the thing you don't have to answer is whether they will fall off record-wise to the point that you don't think they can make the playoffs at all. That was a concern last year. It came in week two, and they were 1-1. And, you know, if you end up going, if he's out 5 weeks and you end up going 1-4, all of a sudden, you know, 2-5 is a really tough record to get into the playoffs from, regardless of whether you get Drew Brees back. This time around, you don't have that concern. You're already 7-2. So worst case scenario, you know, what's the worst case scenario if he misses 4 weeks and you go 1-3? You're still talking about a team that's 8-5 and is almost certainly a wild card team. You worry about the division. You probably lose the division if you lose three games at this point, considering how well the Bucs have played. You'd lose any chance at the one seed if that were to happen. But at the very least, you're looking at a playoff team. But now you do have the question, you know, how long does it take Brees to get back? If he gets back week 16, week 17, and doesn't have enough time to really get back into the flow of things, is that going to impact you in the playoffs? Who knows? But that's the question you have to answer now. They don't have a bye week. They already had it. And that's kind of the struggle you hit when you get that early bye. And so it's really going to be just a matter of, is Brees as superhuman as he appears to be? Or does this really affect him more than he wants to admit it will? You know, it's tough to know. It's tough. You kind of just have to take him at his word. I don't think, you know, as I talked about with Deuce, I don't think that Drew Brees will let his career end this way. I've had a few people bring that up as, you know, what if that was the last pass he threw in the Saints uniform? And it's possible. I will not sit here and tell you that there's no way that Drew Brees' career ends because of this injury. There's just no way to say that. I mean, he's 41 years old, and he's never had an injury this severe in terms of, like, debilitating to the point that he can't play football for health. You know, he couldn't play because of a thumb last year, but it was something that you knew he would be able to come back from. And a rib injury, a lung injury like this, it's not only going to be difficult to recover from, it's the type of thing that could really rob your comfort while playing the game. It could lead to further injuries if you develop, you know, accompanying back issues. You know, Tony Romo is the best example you can come up with. And he had a similar injury. I can't remember what year, but it was also against the 49ers. And he won a game in overtime. He actually stayed in and they beat the 49ers. It was again the 49ers with fractured ribs and a collapsed lung. And, you know, that wasn't what prompted him to retire. You know, but then the last few years of his career, it just kept being every time he took a big hit, it seemed like, here's another back injury, here's another issue, to the point that he couldn't do it anymore. And they obviously had Dak Prescott at that point, and he got in the game and he played and he took over with Tony Romo injured, expecting to come back eventually, but he played so well that not only was there a question of whether Tony Romo could return at a high level, there was a question of whether it was actually the right decision based on how effective Dak Prescott had been. Like, would you actually get worse bringing Tony Romo back? And you never got the answer to that question because Tony Romo decided to hang it up. He went to the broadcast booth, and he's now probably the best broadcaster out there in terms of enjoyment listening to him call games. And Drew Brees already has an agreement to go to the booth. So I'm not saying I think that's what's going to happen here. I'm just saying I can't sit here and honestly say that I don't see a scenario where, for example, he's unable to get healthy enough to come back this season at a high level, right? It's not that he can't come back. It's that this recovery that he's going through now stretches out into week 15, week 16. He's just not able to get healthy enough to get back in time to really impact this season. And you go into an offseason where he's going to have to make another decision, which he's had to each of the last 2-3 years, do I want to keep playing? Can I keep playing? Or should I retire? You know, and I don't know if he's going to be stubborn enough to say, you know, I don't want to go out that way. I want to come back, because I wasn't sure that was the case, you know, each of the last 3 years. And I think the way that the season's ended really, really made that decision easier for him toward coming back. With an injury like this, does that change, you know, where you see the type of impact that these hits can have? I don't know. But I'm not going to say that it's not going to happen. I think that Drew Brees is probably the most competitive person on the planet. I mean, whether it's ping pong, whether it's jump rope, whether it's hula hooping, I think that he's going to be, you know, it's going to drive him insane if he goes out and not only does he miss this season, he also loses the touchdown, the career touchdown record to Tom Brady in the process, because that will happen. He'll probably lose it either this week or next week with Tom Brady only needing, I want to say, three to pass him again. They've been passing it back and forth all season. Brees took it over in the game in the head-to-head matchup because the Saints completely shut down the Bucs. Then you also have this situation where Jameis Winston is going to get an opportunity to show off, you know, to show that he has learned from where he was in the Bucs with the Bucs and over the first 10 weeks of this season. He kind of struggled in the second half of week 10, but, you know, Teddy Bridgewater also struggled in week 2 of last season. And I think anytime you get thrown into a game without a game plan structured for you, there's a good chance that you do struggle. They had a lead in that game. They played it very conservatively. And I think that it's very reasonable to expect that he could come back this upcoming week and look very much different, the way Teddy looked very much different in week 2, 3, 4, 5 of last season after he kind of got thrown into the deep end of the pool against the Rams. But, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how that develops. From what I've seen of Jameis this year, I've seen a guy that really, really seems to be putting in a concerted effort to be mature, to be a guy who will be considered a leader on this team. His post-game interview after the 49ers game, I expected to see this guy who's out here eating W's like he did against the Bucks. You know, he has that demeanor where you think, okay, he's going to be rambunctious. He's going to be super, super high energy and really kind of say, wow, what a game. You know, I can do this. This is going to be my team. And he wasn't that. You know, he was very, very reserved. He was very soft-spoken, very humble, to the point that it seemed intentional. And I think that's a sign that he is really, really trying to embody, you know, the culture of winning and the idea that he is a guy as even keeled as a Drew Brees, as a Teddy Bridgewater, who you trust to give the keys to your team and you don't have a concern about it. And I think that's a positive thing. You saw him after a win. It'll be interesting to see if they come out and lose, if that demeanor changes at all. I don't know. But I was struck by it. That was my big observation in terms of that post-game interview. He was wearing a suit. He was wearing a mask. It always becomes difficult to read emotions behind a mask. But I saw a guy who I think is ready to be a leader on a team. So it'll be interesting to see there. But that's it for today. I appreciate anyone who listened. Again, this is the Saints Chat 504 podcast. Make sure to give us a 5-star review, or a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I'd really love to keep this going. Thanks again to Deuce McAllister and Crown Royal for helping us get some really interesting content, I think, for this first episode. And again, hit me up at Jeff_Nowak on Twitter if you have any questions, comments, you want to tell me how stupid I sound. I'm always down for that. But otherwise, let's see what happens. Week 11, Atlanta Falcons. Falcons hate week. I'm going to have to track down Bjorn Warner and see if I can get a copy of the German broadcast just in case Matt Ryan gets stiff-armed again. But otherwise, be easy, y'all. Thanks for listening.